This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Hey, it's Todd. Just a quick heads up before we start the show. The news is changing rapidly, and things might have changed by the time you hear this episode. So stay up to date with the latest by listening to your local NPR member station and visiting NPR.org. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show. Political newsrooms have a huge challenge on their hands in 2024. How do you cover the democratic process when one of the candidates is anti-democratic? It raises the question as we head into Super Tuesday and a long election year. How can the press responsibly cover the 2024 election? Here's what some of you told us you want to hear.
I would love it if NPR could give us stories of people who are motivating voters, who are doing a great job and have ideas that could help the rest of us do the same.
I would ask that the mainstream media stop editorializing or slanting information given to the public. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. Just the facts, ma'am.
I'm saddened because it seems like so much news coverage of the election is all about personalities. It's not about the issues. It's not about what Biden or Trump accomplished or did not accomplish.
Thanks, everyone, for all of those messages. Many of you want fairness from your politics coverage. How can the media best center voters and ignore the noise ahead of complex and in many cases misleading news cycles? We get into it after the break. I'm Todd Zwillick in for Jen White. You're listening to the 1A podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. Stay with us. We've got a lot to get to.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit their website to get a quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. Then just choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
Joining us, Steve Inskeep. He's the host of Morning Edition and Up First on NPR. Steve, always great to talk to you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Great to have you. I'm glad you're here. Jim Small is here as well. He's the editor-in-chief of the Arizona Mirror, which is an independent nonprofit news outlet in Arizona. Jim, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jim, from your position in Arizona, what do you think are the biggest challenges faced by your newsroom and the press in this election year?
You know, I think the biggest challenges are It's something that the media, I think, has started to grapple with a little bit, but still has a long way to go. And I think that is, you know, really looking at what do we cover, what things are important. And I think in politics reporting in general and in election reporting specifically, I think that there's a tendency to kind of focus on winners and losers and kind of the mechanics of elections and the mechanics of political campaigns, as opposed to what the actual what all of that actually means and what the candidates are standing for, what they're advocating for, and really what it means to the voters who have to make the choice, what it's going to mean to them depending on who wins the election and how things are going to change in their lives, in government, and in their communities. And I think that's really sort of the challenge that we've set out to try to address on our end, at least locally.
Steve, one idea that I think Jim is getting at here is one that's kind of been animating me for the last couple of years, and a growing number of political journalists, I think, and it's focusing on the stakes of the election, not the odds, not the horse race, who's up, who's down, but what happens if this person gets elected, what happens if that person gets elected. How are you thinking this through?
Oh, I think that that's absolutely true, and it's something that has guided NPR coverage for a long time. We try to get a little more in-depth on the issues than perhaps some other networks do, and I'm sure that there are criticisms that can be made of that as well. We certainly do pay attention to the so-called horse race, but NPR itself has tried to adapt a lot of its processes over time to think more seriously about the issues. I was just talking with Krishna Dev Kalamar, who is the Washington editor overseeing national political coverage for NPR News. And he was explaining to me that the way that NPR has even changed the way that we do polling. That's the classic horse race coverage, isn't it? You know, who's up, who's down, who's ahead by 4 points, who's down by 5 points. NPR is asking polling questions differently when we poll to try to get people's insights on issues like crime, like immigration, like Ukraine, the economy, on and on, to try to gain insights about what is on voters' minds in the elections. I will add that sometimes the horse race is the substance. I can think of a particular very interesting example of this. We are, of course, covering the fact that former President Trump, the leading Republican candidate, is going through a number of criminal proceedings and recently got a break from the Supreme Court, which is going to hear arguments over his claim of absolute immunity from criminal prosecution, which is going to push back one of his trials for months. Our correspondent, Kerry Johnson, pointed out that in this case, a horse race question, the calendar, when do things happen, a daybook question, as we would say in journalism, the calendar is the substance, because the defendant is trying to put, fairly explicitly, trying to push the trial back past the election so that if he wins, he can cancel it. So in some cases, the mechanics of all of this are very important. And in other cases, the mechanics of an election are what drive the things that politicians say about the issues.
Well, Steve, you're the only person sitting around this radio table who's interviewed Donald Trump. And I'm going to definitely get to that a little bit later in the show, because there's a certain way you and NPR handled it and some things that you tried to do, given the subject, his anti-democratic, frankly, positions and his propensity often to lie, which is itself a journalistic challenge. And we'll get there. Jim, your newsroom is making moves, though. Last week, you wrote that the Arizona Mirror is going to be changing up the way you do election coverage, be doing away with what you called junk food media. What does that mean, junk food coverage, and what are you changing?
Yeah, you know, I kind of, you know, we talked about this as a staff and everything, and sort of the way I came out of our discussions that we had for several weeks was it almost made me think of, you know, our media diet, right? And there are election stories and political stories that are really just kind of quick hits. They're quick headlines. The goal is to get people to click on them, to read them. And when they walk away, I don't think that they really end up knowing anything more about what's going on in the election or with the candidates or with their government. And those would be things that are stories that are purely just solely about a poll, solely about a campaign finance report, solely about an endorsement, things like that, which they have a utility and there's definitely room for them in your coverage. But I think the problem is that so many of us in the media have for so long looked at those as being their own story, as opposed to taking that bit of polling information or campaign finance information or, you know, looking at the roster of endorsements for, you know, one candidate or for another and wrapping that into kind of a larger piece, a more nutritionally balanced, I guess, to continue the metaphor, piece of journalism that really kind of gets into the issues, gets into the voters, gets into, as you were saying before, the stakes of the election and not focusing on the odds. I think that there's definitely, you know, those things really add to the depth of a story. But I think if you consume them by themselves, I think that, you know, personally, as a reporter, I write those and they vanish from my head. It's almost like putting cotton candy in your mouth. Like they just kind of disappear. And I think that we've heard from readers over the years that they feel a lot the same way. And so I think that this election is the one where we really have committed to trying to change that, to trying to change how we go out, how we write our stories, and really what we focus on, and who we want to talk to first, and really put at the center of the stories. And I think in a perfect world, that's going to be the voters and maybe even our democracy, less so than the actual candidates themselves.
We got this message from Pat, who says, stop reporting sound bites from rallies. Put together a coherent series of policy topics. Find out from previous candidate records and ask pointed questions focused on one topic like Israel or migration at the border. Juxtapose the answers and provide a profile of each candidate and let us figure it out. That's from Pat. Steve Inskeep, you've been covering presidential campaigns for a long time. I'm not going to date you, but from your perspective, how have things changed since 2016? And we all know what I'm getting at. How have they changed since Donald Trump came on the scene?
I mean, I think that it has become more and more challenging for us to do our jobs. It's a challenging media environment. It's a challenging media business environment. I'll just give you one example. I mean, we just heard from Mr. Small the idea of getting more substantive coverage because people find it unsatisfying. But of course, the problem is people seem to be clicking differently than we might like. I mean, the reason all of those meaningless stories get written is because some particular audience seems to be willing to pay for them. And so part of the challenge is to resist that and work within and toward business models where you can do things that you find to be more serious, you find to be more legitimate. The listeners that you just quoted there, I have difficulty really disagreeing with a lot of what they say, although saying I don't want to hear from the candidates is maybe not exactly where I would go with that. I think we want to hear substantively from the candidates. We want to hear seriously from the candidates. I will note one particular candidate, Donald Trump, who says a lot of things that, let us politely say, are at variance with the truth. But Trump is his own person, his own personality, and you want to understand what that person is about. In fact, let's be frank, with both presidential candidates, major party presidential candidates this year, people are questioning, is this guy ready? Is this guy qualified? And so you want to hear from them in a meaningful way, in context, so that you can make judgments about that. You do want to hear from them in some way.
Steve Inskeep is more polite than I am on this issue. It is true that Donald Trump says a lot of things that are at variance with the truth. And it's also true that in interviews, he just lies a lot. That's not an insult. That's a journalistic challenge. Whether to put Donald Trump on the air live, how do you interview him, how do you handle it, and be responsible to the democracy and to voters. And we're going to talk a lot more about that. Steve Inskeep, as I said, has done the job. He's interviewed Donald Trump, and we're going to talk about that a little later. But first, we're going to head to a quick break. Back with more in a moment.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Jim, before we move on, I want to get back to something we mentioned before the break. Your outlet is doing away with what you're calling junk food media. Can you maybe give a specific example of what this change is going to look like in the Arizona Mirror's coverage when you're talking to your reporters and editors about story choices?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think first and foremost, one of the things it's going to mean is that we're going to have fewer stories about the election that we're going to write locally. We just are, because I think it really the way for this to work is that we have to reconsider how we deploy our limited resources, right? Like, we've got a staff of 5 people. We can't go out there and cover every single thing. We always have to make those choices about what gets covered and what doesn't. And I think in this case, it really is a matter of, you know, if we're going to be able to spend an hour or two writing kind of one of those quick hit sort of junk food headline stories that's going to try to get some clicks, is that time better spent going out and actually talking to voters, following candidates on the campaign trail, doing research into their policy positions, being able to kind of set up those compare and contrast like we've heard from so many of your listeners. And so at the end of the day, we might have fewer stories, but what we really want to do is we want to have better stories, and we want to have more in-depth stories and stories that leave the voters feeling more informed and able to go out and make a choice that they feel confident in, and that they can, you know, really do their civic duty as a voter and express who they want to be in charge of our government for the next 2 or 4 years.
Well, Steve, I can say, you know, 1A is a little bit different from the NPR newsroom. We're a talk show. We deal with the news all the time. It's not a newsroom in the sense of editors and reporters running around reporting stories. It's a little bit different. But I will say we have conversations all the time about covering the stakes and not the odds, of de-emphasizing polls and covering what's at stake in the election, and on how to handle the most difficult, challenging candidate to a democracy in many generations, which of course is Donald Trump. And I give you that preface to say, what are the conversations like in the NPR newsroom about strategy, about how to handle political coverage now, and how have those conversations changed?
Well, Jim just touched on a few things that I think are vital for media everywhere and that we certainly do discuss at NPR. You just heard him say that he's got 5 people in his newsroom, and he's got a relatively new site that's trying to fill the enormous gap that has been left by the decline of mainstream, big city daily newspapers across the United States. Newspapers that had hundreds or even thousands of employees now have dozens or a handful or virtually none. And so who is supposed to pick up that burden? Because good news reporting on substance, on issues, on whether somebody lied or not, those kinds of things take time. I really like what Jim said about doing fewer stories that are better. I hope that that leads to better results and also to a successful business model, because it strikes me as essential just to be able to spend 5 more minutes asking if that candidate statement was true or not. Sometimes it only takes 5 minutes. Sometimes it takes 5 months. I think that stuff is vitally important. Arizona is one of many states, roughly 50, affected in some way or other by the immigration debate, where there is an enormous amount of heat but very little light about an extraordinarily complicated system that interacts with the extraordinarily complicated lives of migrants and asylum seekers and other kinds of immigrants from around the world. We don't really have nearly enough illumination about these things, even though there is an enormous amount of information in theory that's just a click away.
Jim, what about immigration in your state? I mean, Arizona's ground zero, as Steve says, for the immigration debate, and I watch a lot of that coverage. Some of it is downright incendiary. Much of it is straight up propaganda about who's coming over the border, who's here to harm Americans, who's here to replace them. What does responsible coverage look like from the people with a direct stake in it there in Arizona?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, right? Because it's such an issue that people feel very strongly about, right, on both sides. And Arizona certainly has. We've been covering this for the last 20 years. I think we've really been kind of the bellwether on a lot of this stuff. You know, it's always important, I think, from our perspective, is to, when people make incendiary statements, is to rebut them with facts in those situations where those statements are either misleading or are outright, you know, propaganda or, frankly, racist and xenophobic. And there is, thankfully, a wealth of data about a lot of those things. A lot of it just comes down to really explaining the laws, because there is a huge tendency to report, to claim that, you know, people are here or are crossing the border, are invading, are here illegally, when in a lot of cases, they are just following the law. And then maybe that law isn't good, and maybe that law needs to be changed. And there are certainly specific policy debates that have happened, and I'm sure will continue to happen around those laws, asylum in particular. But the reality is that, you know, there is a legal framework, and just because some people don't want to, some people frankly just want to pretend that legal framework doesn't exist, doesn't change anything about that. And I think it's incumbent on us to really try to cut through a lot of that spin and that rhetoric to try to present our readers with, here's what the facts of the situation are, and here's how you can, here's how you can kind of judge what people are saying, whether they're folks on the right or folks on the left.
We got this message from Pat, who says, cover what the job of the president is and how the candidates stack up against the job description. And Lisa says, we already know everything about Donald Trump's personality and his chronic lying. I understand that journalism is like any other business. It's driven by clicks and by money. At the same time, as journalists, you are held to a different standard. Focus on fact. Check those facts in truth and report it. Steve, what habits, if any, as the conversation has changed and you guys talk it out in the NPR newsroom, have changed? Are there any old habits of political journalism that have gone away or that frankly should?
First, I would agree with the assertion that we should check people's facts and we should take the time to do that. We should think hard about how much we do live and how much we do recorded to give it an extra day or even an extra week or whatever to figure out what they're saying and why. That's not always possible. It's a live program. A number of live programs we do at NPR and news moves quickly, and sometimes we do live interviews. But you bring on an expert from our own staff with the newsmaker who can check some of their statements afterward. Or you record the interview and put it on a day later. And it's not always that they lied. Sometimes it's they're saying things that are not clear or that need a lot of extra context. There's a variety of things from an outright lie all the way over to just being confusing that we can correct for when we take the extra time to do that. And I think that has changed. I would like to think that if you get specific rather than general about political statements, that you are more illuminating. If the former president says they are various countries that I can't name are releasing people from mental institutions and sending them across the border, you can ask, and this is a thing that he says, by the way, you can ask, which countries do you mean? And it turns out there aren't any. And then we know an answer. And the same thing is kind of true of media coverage. If you are angry in general about the media, it's like, well, which medium and which particular story is on your mind, and let's discuss what happened there. I think that if we went through NPR's archives, we probably would find over time some instances in which someone made an unverified statement or a totally false statement, and it was not immediately pushed back upon. But I think that this newsroom is quite conscious of that in the 21st century and tries a lot of different things to get a real picture to voters of what candidates, not just of what they are saying, but what they are doing, how those two things compare, and where the truth lies.
Well, I promised I'd get to it, Steve, because you are the one in this conversation who has interviewed Donald Trump. And when you did it, you know, NPR, you tried a specific strategy when you interviewed Donald Trump. And I remember this quite well. There was kind of a prebuttal. There was a preface to this interview where you kind of alerted listeners to what they were about to hear in this recorded interview, various misstatements and corrections. And then the end of the interview sounded a little something like this.
People have no idea how big this issue is, and they don't want it to happen again. It shouldn't be allowed to happen, and they don't want it to happen again. And the only way it's not going to happen again is you have to solve the problem of the presidential rigged election of 2020.
Mr. President, one more question. I want to ask about a court hearing yesterday on January 6th. Judge Amit Mehta, he's gone. Okay.
He's gone. Okay. That's how that sounded, Steve. Many of us remember it well. But again, you tried to preface this interview with fact corrections. Donald Trump really kind of flooded the zone with falsehoods anyway. How did that interview go in retrospect, and how did you think through the strategy there?
Well, I'm not sure that I agree with a lot of the characterizations there. First, you said prebuttal. I wasn't there to give a prebuttal like I'm a political
pre-correction
opponent.
Then, pre-correction.
What I'm trying to do is give context so that you can understand what you're about to hear. The second thing that I want to emphasize is that I'm applying the same standards to Donald Trump that I would like to apply to everybody else, which is I'm thinking about their statements and trying to present them in context so that people can understand what they're about. Now, not everybody has the same standards of truth. Not everybody lies so much. Not everybody does various things. things that, that various people do. But the fundamental standard is to get across what they're doing to the electorate. And the fundamental thing that we learned from that interview, which dwelled on his continued efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election, it became clear that in his mind it wasn't even over. And this is 2022, by the way, that was the central message that this guy was moving on and continuing to lead his party on and forcing his party to follow him on, even though a great number of Republicans seem, privately at least, not to believe it. I think that was valid to get out there. He would have had an opportunity to discuss other things had he wanted to take the conversation in a different direction. But instead, we learned what he was about. And when in that interview, if you listen to the full thing, which I welcome people to do, in that interview, when he makes a false statement, I do the same thing that I will do if I am able with other people that we interview, same standard. I jumped right back in with additional facts, with corrections, with statements of reality, which get down to not just saying that Biden won, which Biden did win, but saying that there are dozens of courts and that there were thousands of election officials from both political parties who affirmed the results of the 2020 election. And my job is not just to say, liar, liar, liar. My job is to present those facts to someone in an interview so that they can wrestle with them and ultimately also give other facts and other voices and other context and ultimately let the listener decide what they think is true or not so that they have enough information in real time when the broadcast finally happens. That was a recorded interview, by the way.
Yes.
When the broadcast finally happens so that they can make up their mind. And no one voice should be the only voice we ever hear on a topic.
It was a recorded interview, and I think that's an important point. Would you do an interview with Donald Trump, given what you've just said, in a live format? Would it be productive?
Let me put this in a perhaps slightly frustrating way. I would not automatically say no, but it would need to be in a format where you could give a reasonable picture to the audience of what is going on, and we'd have to think through what would be the way to do that. I think that it is true for a lot of political leaders. I think it would probably be true for President Biden, frankly, or a lot of other people we could name who ran for president or who are in public officials, to do a recorded rather than live interview, let it go a little bit longer, be a little more thoughtful and incisive with the questions and the pushback, and then present it to people with some context. I think that if you are a public official and listening now, and you believe you're telling the truth, whatever it is, that format is a benefit to you because I can sort things through and figure them out and make sure that our audience understands where you're coming from.
After a quick pause, we get to more of your comments and some comments from top journalists in politics talking about how the press should strategize and plan to cover 2024. Stay with us. Back with more in a moment.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
Let's turn now to third-party candidates. John emails to say, please cover those third-party candidates. The media needs to give these candidates a voice as real change because it will not come from the status quo Republicans or Democrats. Tony emails to say the media has a big hand in dictating who gets elected just by how much coverage and whether or not that coverage is good or bad for each candidate. I've yet to hear a discussion of Nikki Haley's plans or policies. And CM says, why haven't you covered Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? His campaign and platform are refreshing. We actually have heard from a lot of you about third-party candidates. Steve Inskeep, how do you think through third-party candidates in your newsroom and how much play to give them?
Sure. Well, somebody mentioned Nikki Haley, who at least at this point is not a third-party candidate,
right,
but is leading or trying to lead a faction of the Republican Party in the Republican primaries. And I will note that we had an interview with Governor Haley on Morning Edition just the other day. So we're definitely paying attention to Nikki Haley, and we're paying attention to some of her policy differences. Getting back to your question that was raised earlier, she has a very different view to U.S. aid to Ukraine, just to give one example off the top of my head. She does not have a terribly substantively different view on abortion than the former president, although she has a different political view on abortion than the former president, and is trying to suggest that she would be less active on that issue as a federal official than she might have been as a state official. And that's a claim that someone puts out there. And then you can argue about it, about whether she's serious about that and what that means. As for third party candidates, we're paying attention. We cover them when it seems warranted. And there's a kind of chicken and egg question there. I mean, they maybe gain when we cover them, and we cover them more when they gain. I grant that seems a little bit self-referential, and we just do the best we can with that. I will note, of course, that with third-party candidates, you have the same questions you have with anybody else. And this is what I mean when I say the standards we're trying to apply. There's not a special Trump standard. There is a Democratic standard. There is a journalistic standard. And we need to do a better job of enforcing the standards we already have. And that also includes third-party presidential candidates. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., just to pull a name out of a hat, has all kinds of views about vaccines that would not stand up to very much scrutiny. And we're happy to cover those people in the same rigorous way that we do anybody else, to the extent that it seems to make sense day by day.
Jim, you're there in Arizona, of course, on the statewide, the local media beat. And Arizona specifically, I mean, the Republican Party in your state has moved decidedly to the right in the last 8 years. In 2022, for example, election deniers ran for governor and for Secretary of State. In January, the GOP in Arizona chose a new chair who backs Donald Trump's false claim that the 2020 election was stolen. So how is the Arizona Mirror handling political coverage of a party that in many ways has moved to such an extreme in your state, and how to contextualize it properly for readers?
I think first and foremost, I think, is really laying out those facts exactly when we're talking about candidates, when we're talking about the party and about what they're trying to do, whether it's through campaigns or through their governance, right? Like Republicans control both chambers of our state legislature by a single seat right now, but we have a Democratic governor. They have, for the last several years, been pushing a lot of legislation about elections. And I think we really consistently try to cut through a lot of the claims and just kind of lay out exactly what is at stake and what they are trying to do. You know, for instance, Arizona was one of the early adopters of vote-by-mail elections. We've done it for, 1991, I think, was when we put it in place. Three-quarters of our voters use it. Republicans in our state legislature are trying to undo that. Even though they were initially the ones that created it, they were the ones that perfected it, they have now done a complete 180 and they're trying to undo that. And so when we write about issues like that, we really want our readers to walk away knowing who supports what and who opposes what. And there's a tendency among government reporters to just kind of attribute things to, oh, the legislature, oh, the Senate, oh, the House, oh, Congress, when in reality, it's not necessarily that. The body might have, through its rules, through its majority, voted for something, but I think it's always important to put in the context of Democrats did this or Republicans back this in order for your readers to have a full understanding as to what's going on in their government and who is driving those changes or is looking to upset the status quo.
That active language, someone did this, someone made this choice, not that it happened or politics made it happen, is what you're getting at there.
Exactly. Things don't magically just happen and form out of thin air, right? They are driven by an interest group. They're driven by a political party. They're driven by maybe in some cases a specific, lawmaker who is trying to get something done because it's a crusade. It's a pet project of theirs. And so it's important for us, I think, to go back to that one comment earlier about not being stenographers that one of your listeners had. I think that is tremendously great advice for journalists. Don't be that. Don't just repeat and parrot back what they say, but
interrogate it, investigate it, and really, you know, as Steve's been saying this whole time, cut through all of that to get to the bottom of it and to find the facts that underlie everything.
Well, Steve, you mentioned just a moment ago that there isn't a Donald Trump standard, there isn't a Joe Biden standard, there's a democratic and a journalistic standard, and I definitely hear that. It makes me want to get you to react to something important that our colleague Jonathan Carl of ABC said just a couple of years ago. He was on CNN speaking with Brian Stelter about the prospects of covering Donald Trump in a new campaign. I don't think that Donald Trump had jumped in the campaign yet at that point, but he had a warning for news consumers, but also for newsrooms.
It's an immense challenge because you're covering essentially an anti-democratic candidate. You're covering somebody running in a system that is trying to undermine that very system, and somebody who is going to be perpetually lying. I mean, he's still, I think that the point of your previous segment is really on target. He is consumed and obsessed with 2020 and trying to convince the world that election was somehow corrupt, that it was filled with fraud, that he actually won it. He is trying to repeat a lie so many times that people will believe it. And as journalists, you know, we can't allow we can't be a conduit for that lie. So it's an immense challenge. What does a debate look like with Donald Trump in it? How do you can't air Trump speeches unfiltered as often happened in the 2016 campaign. Interviews are incredibly challenging.
Well, Steve, you hear it from Jonathan Carl, a well-known colleague in Washington, D.C. There is no Donald Trump standard. There's only a journalistic standard. But he's implying that the calculus has changed here. He's unlike any other candidate in recent memory or maybe ever in our democratic system, and it requires different thinking. Do you agree with that?
John's a great journalist and a friend of mine, by the way, and I appreciate what he had to say there. Yeah. But what he said tees up the day-to-day challenge that journalists face. Let's think about that perspective on Donald Trump, that he's essentially an anti-democratic candidate. And there is a case for that. He lost an election and tries to pretend that he won. Even as president, which he won through the Electoral College legitimately, even as president, he would declare on Twitter that something was illegal because he thought so, and not because there was any actual law. That's attempting to rule by fiat if he could get away with it. I mean, there's a lot of things you could say are anti-democratic about this person. But if you are a journalist trying to bring insight to the public, you can't just say he's an anti-democratic candidate. You can't just label him that and leave it at that. And let me tell you why. Because Donald Trump himself, if you listen to his speeches, is saying, I'm the democratic one. I'm the one for democracy. Democracy is under threat because I am being persecuted and prosecuted. And his supporters will, his core supporters will believe that and repeat it. If you just label someone, they're just going to use the label and turn it back on you, which is a thing that he's a master at. What needs to happen with Trump, as with any political candidate, is a rigorous examination of what they've done, how they've done it, and in a campaign sense, what is it that they promise to do? And is it really possible? Is it realistic? What are the things that he wants to do? And he has made a number of statements. For example, one of the clearest ones has to do with promising the largest mass deportation in American history. And that raises questions about what is that? How many millions of people will be affected? What are the costs of that? What are the effects on American democracy about the way that that would be conducted? It raises all kinds of specific questions. And it makes me want to go for specificity and not just label a person.
Jay in Oklahoma emails us, what are your incentives? What drives a reporter to do the legwork on a story to get independent confirmation? And what drives them to just say, get something published? If reporters are only incentivized to push clickbait and sensationalism for ad revenue, how do we change those incentives to make them more professional? Jim Small in Arizona, I'm going to guess that Jay's question is something that keeps you up at night and something you've pondered in great detail.
It is, and certainly in former jobs where driving traffic has been important and has been, you know, in some cases maybe kind of paramount, or driving subscriptions, that absolutely is a concern. And I think
And for a lot of journalists, I think it really does depend, unfortunately, on where you work and what the business model is of your company. I'm fortunate enough right now to be working for a nonprofit. We don't accept any advertising. So the idea of generating more clicks in order to beef up our ad revenue, thankfully, is not a thing. We don't have subscriptions. All of our work is free. We're funded, through the public charity model. We take donations. We take, we have grants. We have a lot of support from our individual readers, which is wonderful and does kind of free us up from at least having to worry about the economics of that. Mm. Obviously, we like to have people look at our stuff. We like to have people read our stuff. That's how we attract new readers and how we attract new donors. But at the end of the day, in terms of what our motivation is, locally, I think all of us are really committed to the idea that news is the public interest, right? And that we serve the public, and we serve our readers, and we serve Arizona voters. And really, our goal is to try to, we all firmly believe that a better informed community makes for a better community. And so if we can help our neighbors, help other Arizonans understand what's happening, that they are going to be better citizens and be, we're going to have, just that much of a better neighborhood, city, state, region, everything.
And that's part of the reason why we focus so much on community journalism here on WENA, in addition to the national story, of course. But what you have to say there, Jim, really rings true, I think for us and how we try to conduct this show. We got this note, and it's a good one, from David in Georgetown, Texas, who says, "You want to report on the candidates fairly? Have you ever tried to read what Donald Trump says? Because when you do, minus his emphasis and inflections, and flatly read the unhinged or the nonsensical, negative and destructive nature, it becomes a lot more easily apparent, while Joe Biden speaking is logical and emphasizes building and improvement." Now, Dave may have partisan preferences there, Steve, and I think we have to acknowledge that. But it does raise something important journalistically in my mind, which we've had lots of reporters here on 1A who've warned about 2024 and the danger of equalizing unequal things. As political journalists, we sort of sit in the middle. All sides are fair. They kind of fight it out, and we sort of stay neutral. Even though I think Dave probably has partisan preferences, he raises an important point, which is the risk of equalizing things that aren't equal.
Sure.
Do you and think that
gets,
through that?
I absolutely do. And it gets down to the question of specificity. If you just say a pox on both their houses, I don't think you're doing a service for anybody. There are two sides of an issue. There are many sides of an issue. But you want to look at those many sides in their specific details. And if someone is more or less truthful, more or less credible, the fair thing to do, the proper thing to do, is to represent them as they are and pay a lot of attention. I want to follow up on one thing that you were just discussing when you were talking about the pursuit of clicks. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's turned out pursuing clicks mindlessly is not a very good business model. A lot of the news organizations that have tried that have ended up failing, and a lot of people are looking for different ways to make money. I mean, people have made billions of dollars, trillions of dollars off the internet, but not necessarily news organizations, certainly not in a long-term sense. And what I think my news organization goes for is more of a relationship with an audience over time that can rely on us over time, get to know us over time, rely on us as a guide in an utter sea, an utter flood of information and misinformation, to steer them through in a good faith way the best we can today. And if we miss something today or screw something up today, we'll be back tomorrow to keep trying again. I think that long-term relationship is what NPR is betting on. And whether ultimately it works out, I don't know. I certainly hope so. But just pursuing clicks is not working for anybody, really.
That long-term relationship is so important. And frankly, Steve, it's a big part of the reason why we wanted to have you join us with the long view, the guy who's interviewed Donald Trump, the guy who's confronted the question on the air in front of millions of listeners. So we certainly appreciate it. That's Steve Inskeep, host of Morning Edition and Up First on NPR. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And Jim Small, the local perspective from there in Arizona, editor-in-chief of the Arizona Mirror. Thanks for bringing us into your community and all of the journalistic challenges you're having and what you're trying to do about it. We sure appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you both for joining us. And a reminder, we just launched 1A Plus. When you join 1A Plus, you get to listen to our show sponsor free, and you're supporting our work. Go to plus.npr.org/the1A to find out more. That's plus.npr.org/the1A. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillegen for Jen White. Let's talk more soon. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp. It's easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Therapy can provide the tools and self-awareness to help you learn how to recharge, define your boundaries, and build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp Online Therapy. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.